This is the Greg Bedard Patriots Podcast with Nick Cavins.
This episode is brought to you by Prize Picks, the largest daily fantasy sports platform in North America. Download the app today and use code CLNS for a first deposit match up to $100. Do us a favor. If you like the pod, want to support it, go over to Prize Picks and sign up using that code CLNS. It will help us all tremendously. All right, let's start with some headlines, Greg. And we got to start with Kyle Duggar re-signing with the Patriots. This came out over the weekend. 4 years, $58 million. Reportedly, $32.5 million guaranteed. Your thoughts on that deal?
Yeah, so I really sort of need to see the structure at the end of it. Is that $32 million guaranteed like all in the first 2 years? Or is it like, you know, I could see the Patriots, they've done this from time to time in the past where it's like, all right, $16 million guaranteed in the first year and then split it between the second and third years. If it's the latter, I feel a little bit better about it. Look, do I think this is a little rich for Kyle Duggar? Yes. But, and, you know, have I been critical of the player in the past? Yes. And I'm not going to back down from that. It's just, I think this, the Patriots, where they are right now, it's not in a vacuum. Like, you know, when they're just in a different place. They're restarting their program with a new head coach, a new general manager, a new vibe in the building, all that stuff. And so you can't really compare, like, would you do this, like, say, if Bill Belichick was here and they were coming off like a playoff year? You know, I would probably be more critical of it, but I think that the Patriots overpaid a little bit for a guy who has been out there all the time, barely misses any snaps, has been a good to very good player for this team. Has been a lead by example type of guy. I'm fine with that because I think what the Patriots are establishing or reestablishing something that they used to do in the past, but they got away from, which is draft, develop. If you do the right things, we're going to reward you. We're going to keep our core players here. And if they overpaid by a couple million dollars, I'm not going to quibble with that. I think it's important for them to reestablish this draft and develop culture in the building. And it's something that's a foundation of the Packer way, the Ron Wolf way, which is, you know, draft, develop, re-sign your guys that have proven to be good players in your system and then go from there. So I'm fine with it. I think that, you know, it, probably they can get out of this after 2 years. If Kyle, say, doesn't go to another level, if he's not worth it, that's fine. I don't think that's going to be an issue. I think Kyle has proven to be very consistent at a good to very good player. I don't think he's ever going to be elite, and I don't have a problem with that. You know, it's he's a good player. They need good players. Keep your good players.
I agree with it. You know, I agree with the overall picture and your take on that. It is an overpay. To me, it's absolutely an overpay. I know some people are pushing back on that idea. When you look at the safety market, it is depressed right now. If it's $32.5 million guaranteed in the first couple of years, like you said, that I think that'd be more money guaranteed than Xavier McKinney. So it's an overpay. But they kept their good player, and they kept the guy who played, what, 98% of the snaps last year. He's a pivotal piece to this defense, so I don't have an issue. And I think this shows us again, Greg, Elliott Wolf, one major change, one major difference from Bill Belichick is not only are we willing to keep our own guys and pay our own guys, we are willing to pay at the top of the market for our own guys. You know, Wolf paying Owenu, what Owenu got. Now this deal with Duggar, they're willing to pay these guys at or near the top of the market, which I think speaks volumes when you compare it to Jacoby Myers last year, who came out during the Super Bowl week and said, yeah, the difference was like $1 million. I do ask you, though, with this signing, with this extension to Duggar, to me, he has to get back to what he is best at, closer to the line of scrimmage. How you handle him, Greg?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that he is, he's very similar to Patrick Chung, where he didn't really get into a groove and really become a really good player in this defense until the second time around when they said, all right, let's take what you're good at, which is around the line of scrimmage, covering tight ends at times, and just doing that. Now, I think that Kyle, I think probably his best asset is his ability to blitz from the second level. I think it's way better than Chung ever was. I think with his speed and explosiveness, it gives them a real weapon. I think that they're going to utilize that even more. And yeah, I think having him around the line of scrimmage, using him as a way to attack pass protections and things like that, that's where he stands out. And the more they can have him do that, the more he's going to be impactful and make this defense even better.
All right, something else jumped out at me over the past couple of days. And yesterday we had Hunter Henry and Jabril Peppers meet up with the media. And they talked about how it's different. It's different in the building. Now, you and I both know, everybody knows, it's really early. Okay, it's really, really early to make any kind of grandiose proclamations about the new coaching staff and Mayo and how he runs his business. But I did find one thing that Hunter Henry said pretty telling. Andrew Callahan tweeted this out. Because Andrew asked Henry, how is it different? When Henry said it was different. And one of the things that Henry said that stood out to me was, quote, just maybe listening to you is good, unquote. Bill Belichick, obviously, was somebody who, it was Bill's way or the highway, right? And it seems like the lines of communication between players and coaches are going to be different, especially players to head coach. And Mayo is maybe a little bit more open to listening to his players. Really, when it comes down to it, Greg, is that going to make that big of a difference? Could that really signify a big change, significant change? Or is it just, well, it's early and he wants to make the players feel welcome?
It's a good question, Nick, and there's a lot of different philosophies on this. I think the number one thing is, when it comes to a team dynamic, I think accountability is number one. The coaches holding the players accountable, the players holding the coaches accountable, and them being open to that, I think is important. And I think we saw a breakdown of that in the latter years with Bill Belichick, especially with everything that went on with the coaching staff, and it wasn't just the Matt Patricia and Joe Judge year; it was also last year. And I think that it's very hard when a player looks at a coach who they don't think is up to par, because these players, they want to win and they want to know, are you making me a better player so I can make more money and be secure with my family? And I think that some of the decisions that Belichick made, and he didn't really explain them and say, like, this is why I'm doing this and this is why it's going to be good for you. That sort of one-way street left a lot of doubts in the players' minds, and it did not set the team up for success. So I think that just as long as the coaches and the front office, especially the coaches, as long as they're open and honest and they say, this is where you are and this is where we expect you to be and this is how we're going to get you there, the more conversations like that, the more the players trust in the coaching, that they're being put in the best position possible. And that allows for a very solid foundation for a successful football team.
All right. One more thing I wanted to ask you about before we move on to the draft and quarterback thoughts, since you've worked through a lot of the film, was Merrill Hodge. Now this has to do with the draft. It has to do with Drake May. And boy, did this catch a lot of headlines, a lot of people talking about it. I talked about it yesterday on my podcast. Hodge said that drafting May, and this was in a radio interview, I think it was WCCO, drafting May will get you fired. Your reaction to that, Greg?
Look, I think that Merrill is certainly entitled to his opinion. He's somebody that I listen to. I mean, with all these guys, I respect the position, the opinion, and, listen to it, take it in. I don't necessarily toss things out. I know a lot of people, a lot of Patriots fans don't like Merrill Hodge from some of his comments about, Belichick and the Patriots in previous years. I just don't go down that road. Now, a lot of what Merrill Hodge said about Drake May is correct. Now, he'll get you fired comment, do I think that's strong? Yes, but the crux of his opinion about his inconsistency. He compared him to Malik Willis. There, you know, about how like it's hard to find like a really good game for Drake May from start to finish. I mean, all this stuff is factually correct. Now, you know, where I differ from Merrill Hodge, and you know, I had a conversation with a longtime offensive coordinator last week, and I'm going to be writing about it, sort of the process of, you know, how you evaluate quarterbacks in the draft and the whole process to it, including like, you know, the importance of the 30 visits and, you know, going in and seeing them, you know, either in their hometown or at their colleges. You know, one thing that stuck out to me, and it sounds simple, but I think people sort of overlook it when they talk about these quarterbacks, is like it's not just like the GM making the pick or the front office making the pick and them evaluating talent. You know, you need the coach's input because you have to say, all right, this is where this player's at. What's the plan? If we take this player, what's the plan? How are we going to use them? How does he fit into our offense? Again, all this stuff sounds simple and pretty obvious, but, you know, it doesn't always go that way. A lot of times, like, you know, teams will pick players, especially at the quarterback position, and say like, well, they're just going to fit into what we do. And that's just setting that player up to fail. I mean, you could even just look at, you know, Mac Jones from his rookie year, you know, there was a concrete plan that it was obvious that Josh McDaniels, at least, and probably Bill Belichick said, all right, this is what this kid can do in our offense. This is what we're going to ask him to do. And then they got away from that and Mac's career went down. And so, yes, Drake May has a lot of flaws if you're looking at him as this is a finished product. But I think there will be a lot of coaches, including some in the Patriots building, that say, you know, look at the talent. He was not coached well this past year. He didn't have a good system. But if we do X, Y, and Z with him when he gets here, the sky's the limit for this kid. And I think that the plan for the quarterback is probably more so important than just the evaluation of the quarterback where they are.
There are a lot of opinions. There's just a world full of opinions. And as you get closer to the draft, you get more and more opinions. So good on Hodge for having an opinion. That's how I see it. It's just an opinion. And everybody's going to feel differently. It's very subjective. You and I have talked about how difficult it is to evaluate a quarterback and get it right. That's why a lot of teams get it wrong. A couple things, though, on Hodge. Number one, he's not perfect. He's not flawless. Mm-hmm. Nobody is. He has certainly a history of evaluating quarterbacks right. Johnny Manziel, that clip between he and Skip Bayless has made the rounds a billion times, how he told Bayless that Manziel was not a first-round pick. He also had C.J. Stroud relatively high, higher than a lot of other people did. However, he also said Justin Herbert was erratic, inaccurate. You can't teach a guy to be more accurate. He didn't like Herbert. He also said he would not touch Jordan Love with a 10-foot pole and that he would draft Love in the fifth or sixth round. Didn't like the idea that Love called himself a playmaker, which I think really allows you to dive into the head of Merrill Hodge.
Mm-hmm.
He was turned off when Love said that he was a playmaker. His point was quarterbacks should not call themselves playmakers. It's 2024 now, Merrill. Like, yes, they should. Patrick Mahomes is a playmaker. Lamar Jackson's a playmaker. Like, what are we doing here? And I also just think that Merrill tends to evaluate the quarterback in the now.
Yep.
And Greg, I think it's very important for you and I to say, and we've said it before and we'll continue to say it, when you're drafting a guy, especially at number three, it is not about 2024. It's about 2027, 2028, and 2030. So Hodge tends to look at these guys as who they are, and I don't think he truly appreciates how some guys, not every guy, but some guys can progress, get better at a lot of different things, and they are just a different quarterback 3 years from now than what they were in their second season as a starting quarterback at the collegiate level.
Yeah. I mean, I 100% agree with that. And, you know, you bring up, you know, Justin Herbert. And, you know, Josh Allen and Justin Herbert are both cautionary tales for me. I mean, we all get things wrong, especially in the draft process. Bill Belichick would get things wrong. And you know, nobody, basically like 50% is a good batting average in the draft. But like, you know, Justin Herbert, the lesson I learned from that was, you know, not trying to, you have to try to separate the player from the scheme and what's going on around him. And that's something that I'm trying to apply to somebody like Drake May. And, you know, Josh Allen, of course, we all know his struggles. He was a wild bucking Bronco coming out of Wyoming. I mean, he was horrendous basically his first 2 years against the Patriots. He looked like he couldn't do anything, but like the leap that he made in year three was just, you know, unprecedented. And so, you know, you have to parse through all those things, and you also have to realize that not every player is the same. I mean, you know, maybe Justin Herbert and Josh Allen were wired in a way that allowed them to go to another level in the pros. Does Drake May have that? I don't know. And I don't think any of us are going to know, including the pro teams. But I do think that, you know, Merrill and his criticisms, I do think he sort of tends to view these guys as finished products, where you're looking at a guy like, you know, Drake May and J.J. McCarthy are like the youngest quarterbacks in this class, whereas Jaden Daniels and, you know, Bo Nix certainly are older prospects. They might be closer to be finished products, just like, you know, Kyle Duggar coming out of Lenoir Ryan was like 24 years old. He just got this contract. Yep. He's going to be 29 this year. Has Kyle Duggar, you know, if the Patriots got Kyle Duggar when he was 21, could he have gone to an elite level faster? Probably. So all those things need to be considered.
Yeah, age matters, no doubt. Before we move on to the quarterback thoughts, as I said, Greg is mostly done with his quarterback film looking at this draft. Let's first remind people, Greg, about Prize Picks.
March is over, but the biggest moments in college basketball tip off the month of April. Be part of the action on Prize Picks for both men's and women's college basketball. Prize Picks has something for every sports fan, from basketball and hockey to League of Legends and everything in between. You can pick LeBron, Caitlin Clark, Connor McDavid, and Jude Bellingham all in the same entry. I had just the other night, I had Caitlin Clark for more than 30 points and LeBron James for more than 7 3-pointers, and I hit it. Download the Prize Picks app today and use code CLNS for the first deposit match up to $100. Again, that's a match up to $100 by using code CLNS. Pick more, pick less. It's that easy over at Prize Picks.
Tyler O'Neill.
Whoa, that was bombs. A bomb yesterday.
That guy, he bust through his jersey. He's got all those muscles. Hit bombs on a youngie. All right. Let's get back to football, though. Greg's been in the lab. He's been pouring through the film, doing lots of work. What do you got on Jaden Daniels, Greg?
Okay, so just to be upfront, I have a lot more work to do on J.J. McCarthy. I'm almost done with Jaden Daniels. I'm pretty much done with Drake May. So everybody knows, who's especially listened to this pod, I've been touting Jaden Daniels for a very long time, including relaying what I heard at the league meetings about Jaden Daniels, which was basically the NFL people that I talk to, the executives that I respect, and they have a good track record with the quarterback. They're all over the moon about Jaden Daniels in terms of his accuracy, throwing the ball, his calmness in the pocket, his height. Yeah, his weight's a little less than ideal, but it looks like he could put on more weight. And then also his running ability. Now, after watching a lot more of Jaden Daniels, I will say that I'm not quite as gung-ho about Jaden Daniels as I was or these NFL people are. And here's why. The biggest reason, you know, before I really studied him closely and saw like multiple games, in my eye from the college football season and what I had seen of Jaden Daniels, and from the opinions that I had received, I thought that his running was dynamic, elite. I don't know if I agree with that anymore. I think that if you think that he's Lamar Jackson, no, he's not. running. Lamar is much more quick twitch. He is much more jitterbuggish. Jaden Daniels is more of a straight line runner. I would say more along the lines of like a Colin Kaepernick type of player, not quite the long legs. Jaden Daniels actually has short legs, a big torso. So they're different in that regard. But Jaden Daniels, like, you don't see him making a ton of elusive plays from the pocket. Yes, they'll be called runs, and he's great on those because it's straight line. Sometimes he thinks that he's going to get out of pressure with his legs, and he doesn't because he doesn't have sort of the electric lateral mobility, the quick twitch stuff. And so sometimes it gets into trouble. Now, is he a good runner? Yeah, but it's pretty much, as I said, straight line speed. So that's a concern. I do really love his throwing. I heard there's criticism. I was on TV with Burt Breer on Sunday night, and he heard from executives a couple of criticisms of Jaden Daniels, which I don't agree with. Number one, that he doesn't throw to the middle of the field that often, which you need to do in the pros. You know, does he do it as much as everybody else? No, he does do it. He does do it well, especially the deep medium to deep middle of the field. But I do think a lot of it was LSU scheme and what they asked him to do. The other thing that Burt said that is a criticism of is that Jaden Daniels doesn't throw on the run very much at all. I think Burt quoted one team as saying, like, you could only count like 12 snaps where he really threw on the move when it wasn't designed. That there is some of that. But I think that's a little bit overrated. I think that that is there on film. I think he has the ability, and I do think it's something, I do think it's more scheme specific. I think that teams, especially if you put them in the Patriots offense and it's the Alex Van Pelt sort of West Coast, he's already doing a lot of the play action boots that system asks of the quarterback. He already does that. And I do think he's capable of a lot more. But, you know, when you watch him on film, sometimes there's been some criticisms about his overall arm strength. I think he's pretty good to the deep, medium sidelines. He brings heat when he needs it. I think his downfield ability, I think early in the season, it was a little bit less. I know that some people will look at the Florida State game, which was one of the better defenses that he faced, and look at that as, you know, he wasn't very successful. I look at it as it's the first game of the year. A lot of those college game, those college schedules, those first games, I mean, they haven't done much. He was in a new system with new teammates. It's the first game. I just don't like those games. I throw those games out. I don't think that they're a good barometer for anything. And I think as you watch Jaden Daniels last season, as he got more and more comfortable in the scheme with his teammates, what he could do, you know, you see a lot of elite play as the season goes on. Now, you know, so I guess the bottom line for me on Jaden Daniels is, I don't, in my opinion, I think that, and we'll get into the rankings, I don't think he's the clear-cut number two in this class. I think it's a lot more complicated. I think Caleb Williams is clearly number one. And then I think between Daniels, May, and even McCarthy, you get into more of a, you know, what's your flavor at quarterback? What do you want? What do you expect out of the position? What is your scheme set up for? And I think that's when some of this discussion about May, or could it be McCarthy, or could it be Daniels? I do think it's legitimate because I do think it's a little bit, you know, in the eye of the beholder.
The thing with Daniels to me, and I've cooled off a little bit on him too. The thing that I keep going back to is pressure to sack rate. I talked about this on my podcast earlier this week. Now, Jaden got much better this year with that statistic. He was just over 20%, and to be fair to him, Drake May is just under 20%. 20% seems to be some kind of, you know, indicator as success at the NFL level for these guys. You go back to last year and Jaden was at like 30%, which is just obnoxiously high. The issue, though, to me is when you combine that is Jaden a lot of times he'll just tuck and run. And sometimes he doesn't let plays develop. And his initial instinct sometimes is just to go. And so that can lead to some issues in several different ways. I think that's my biggest concern about him is just he loves to, okay, fight or flight. He's flying, baby. He's he's ready to go and get out of trouble and just run with the football. And then you couple that with, and Drake has some of this too, they don't love getting down. They don't love getting out of bounds. Now, Drake is, you know, he's 6'4", Drake May. And Jaden's tall. He's like 6'3", 6'3 and a half. But we've talked about the weight and the frame. And as Greg said, the torso. You got a long, long torso. Like torso and neck. That's all Jaden did. Mm-hmm. I think like just torso and neck with him with just shoes at the bottom. And the guy that is so willing to immediately tuck and run. With that, with what you said about his straight line running, not necessarily shifty, not getting down, not getting out of bounds, the frame, I think that is a legitimate concern. Now, I'm glad to hear that the middle of the field, you feel better about that because that's one of the big questions I've had about him too. I think Drake is better because of arm strength, middle of the field, and tighter windows. May will throw to tighter windows in the middle of the field. Jaden is... The one thing I will say about Jaden is he's not very turnover worthy. I think Pro Football Focus had him down for like 7 turnover worthy plays all year. But Drake also is not very turnover worthy. There's all this talk about how he's erratic and how he's dangerous and he does these crazy things. He was sub 2% turnover worthy plays this year. So, and he throws the football in a lot of tighter areas in many cases than Daniels. So I kind of think that's an even argument there with as far as, you know, turnover worthy and how crazy and loose they are with Daniels running so much more than May. I give you that background, Greg, because I ask you last week when we talked about Drake May, you said you would be willing to take that big swing at 3 with May. After watching the film of Jaden, would you be willing to take that swing at 3 for him?
For Jaden?
Yeah.
A couple different reasons. Crunching some of the numbers on these guys, and I think we might have touched on this, but I went to another stat. But you know, just to what you've talked about, so I think Nick, both you and I can agree that we think that, and this comes from somewhat from looking at Mac Jones and watching him. And again, I'm not gonna just because Mac Jones did not work out here. I am not going to say he was not worthy of the pick or is not a good football player. I'm sorry. I'm just not going to back. I'm not going to back off that. Like, I think he's a good player. I think he was worthy of the 15th overall pick and the Patriots let him down. We'll see whether that holds true. If he ever revives his career, we'll see. But you know, I think you and I would agree that seeing how a player operates under pressure in crucial situations to me is the biggest indicator of success for a quarterback. Now, you know, looking at this year's class and also looking back at Mac Jones when he came out of Alabama, looking at these quarterbacks under pressure, okay, first of all, I throw Bo Nix out because he was only under pressure like 16% of the time. I think you could play quarterback at Division I college football under that little pressure. And plus, they throw so many quick passes and bubble screens. His average depth of target for the whole season for Bo Nix was like 6.8 yards. Everybody else was like, you know, 10 plus. So it's not apples to apples. So I toss Bo Nix out because I can't tell he wasn't under pressure enough. Mac Jones, when he came out of Alabama, under pressure, the difference between his big-time throw percentage and turnover-worthy plays was just 2.6. So he was 5.7 big-time throw percentage. His turnover-worthy plays was 3.1. Jaden Daniels, under these same stats, pressure stats, his big-time throw percentage was 11.3%. His turnover-worthy plays was 2.8. That's a difference of 8.5. That is by far better than anybody in this class. Now, Bo Nix is next, but again, I toss him out. Michael Penix was next in sort of the, I call it the BTT-TWP differential. Bo Nix, Michael Penix was number two at 5.6. Drake May was 4.2. J.J. McCarthy, interesting enough, was more along the lines of Mac Jones. So his big-time throw percentage was 10.6. His turnover-worthy plays under pressure was 6.8, which is by far more than anybody else among these top, quote-unquote, tier quarterbacks in this draft. Now, the other stat that I looked at, this is third or fourth down, 3-plus yards to go, okay? Jaden Daniels had, and I did the NFL passer rating. I didn't want to do the college rate passer rating. I don't understand. It's just absurd. Everything's like 200. This is how it came through, okay? Third and fourth down, 3-plus yards. Jaden Daniels, NFL rating, 141.5. J.J. McCarthy, 123.9. Bo Nix, 123.3. Now, I also compared, because I hear this from a lot of people, especially Drake May supporters like my buddy Chris Gasper. He loves Drake May, and any criticisms of Drake May from this season, he's like, okay, well, did you watch his junior year tape? Okay. Drake May in 2022, when things were better around him, had a 112.3 rating on third or fourth downs and plus 3 yards. Drake May this past year, 107.1. So it wasn't a huge differential. It was definitely better his, you know, in 2022, but not a huge difference. This surprised me. Michael Penix came in last by far at 80.2. So wow. You take Jaden Daniels under pressure and on third and fourth down. To me, he's clearly number two in this class. And you know, I'm going to bet on that. If it came down to it and say the Commanders went in a different direction and, I don't know, all these quarterbacks are on the board, my ranking for the quarterbacks as of right now, and it might change a little bit, obviously Caleb Williams is number one. That's a given. I'm still going Jaden Daniels, number two. I'm going Drake May. I'm going Drake May, number three. I forgot to put this on my list, but I'm going McCarthy next after that, and then Penix. And that's it for me as far as the quarterbacks this year.
All right, so I would switch May and Daniels. I like May more than Daniels.
That's legit.
And I do think age matters. And yep. I think, you know, the arm plays. I think the frame, especially with the Patriots, they're not major concerns, but I do have some concerns about Daniels and his ability to play in you know, windy weather, inclement weather, you know, coming from where he's come from. And so, but I would lean May over Daniels, but I've got Caleb, I've got May, I've got Daniels. And Penix and Nix is just, it's so tough to me. Because Penix has been around forever. There are things that legitimately concern myself with Penix, and mostly it's injury. And I know people will say, oh, we checked out clean bill of health. Still, Doc Flynn has tweeted about this. It's, you know, he ran a great 40. He had a fantastic vertical jump, but it's more about deceleration when you tear your ACL twice. It's more about, you know, sudden shifts in the pocket and everything. So, you know, pressure sack rate for Penix, if you're wondering, was incredible. He was under like 8% this year, which was tops by far. So if you're going off of that indicator, and he's got a rocket arm, but, you know, there's just some things. He looks a little nervous to me when he's, mm-hmm. when he's getting some heat. He just looks uncomfortable. He looked uncomfortable against Michigan, and Michigan, you know, took a lot of those deep and outside throws away from him. And forced him to change his game, and he was so uncomfortable. Where I do wonder if he's a guy that, hey, look, if I've got some weapons around me and we run the scheme that I'm super comfortable with, then I'll be good. But if I got to do something extra more often than not, then I'm going to get into some trouble. And Nix, as you said, look, this guy played, you know, he started over 60 games, the most in college history. The guy's been in college for, he's like one of those lifetime frat dudes I saw when I used to go to URI. The guys would be like 27 years old, still doing freaking, you know, bong hits and keg stands.
What are they? They're like Wooderson. I get older. Yeah. They stay the same age. Yes, they do.
I'll tell you, I had a guy. I wasn't in a frat. Do what you do. I was not a frat guy, but I had a couple of friends that were in a frat. And there was this one dude in the frat. He was like mid to late 20s. He was just there. He's still going to school. It's like, what are we doing, man? Can we move it along? So look, Knicks, Penix. I might even side with Knicks a little bit. But, you know, I'm looking at the top three, and I've got, for me, it's Caleb, it's May, it's Jaden Daniels. All right, before we get to Mike Giardi's mock draft 2.0 and have Greg grade his employee, this episode is brought to you by Prize Picks, the largest daily fantasy sports platform in North America. Download the app today. Use code CLNS for a first deposit match up to $100. Also, check them out over at BSJ, $50 for the year. Giardi and Bedard doing great work with the Patriots, getting ready for the Celtics and Bruins postseason as well. So a lot happening. BSJ, $50 for the year. All right, let's run through Giardi's mock draft before we go. The first round, let's look at the first four picks. He's got Caleb going to Chicago, which everybody has. He has Drake May going to Washington. J.J. McCarthy going to your New England Patriots. And then he has Jaden Daniels going four, not to Arizona, but Minnesota trading up and drafting Daniels at four. How you feeling about that, Greg?
So let's give a little bit of, did I put it on here? I can't find it. I did it after the fact, after I sent you the thing. So this is what Mike says. He says, the Pats like McCarthy. I know this for a fact. The question then becomes how much. He is the youngest of the QBs in this draft, and his tape, while somewhat limited because of the type of team Michigan was, is good. He's such a loose athlete and moves better than I had in my mind's eye from watching him during the year. Is he ready to assume the number one chair from day one? Unlikely. But there's no rush. His intelligence is right up there at the top of the class, and fundamentally, McCarthy has a better base than May. I think those things are all true. Now, I don't know about the Patriots' interest in J.J. McCarthy. Mike obviously has very good sources. That's why I hired him. I have not heard that. And quite frankly, I don't trust a lot of that stuff during this time of year. The Patriots, between Gerard Mayo's talk at the league meetings when he talked about Drake May's floor, and also some of the stuff that's out there, this could be the Patriots just trying to position somebody to come up and want to offer a bag for number three to get McCarthy. I don't know. I don't believe any of this crap that's out there this time of year. I just don't, you know, I've been doing this for 20 years. And like I've told this story before, you know, very similar. The Dolphins were in a very similar position. It was after Nick Saban. I want to say it was the first year of Cam Cameron. And Randy Mueller was the GM. He now does stuff for The Athletic. And I'm not going to say exactly who it was, but somebody straight up lied to my face and told me that, and this was when the Dolphins, I think took, it was when they took Ted Ginn. So they told me, they said, if Brady Quinn is there, we are taking Brady Quinn. And I had no reason to doubt this guy. He had never lied to me. Always gave me great information, take it to the bank. And I wrote that up and they passed on Brady Quinn, which was maybe the right thing to do. I don't know. But then they took Ted Ginn, the wide receiver, in the middle of the first round. And they ended up taking John Beck at quarterback, I think, in the second round. And apparently that was their plan all along. They loved Beck. They wanted him. Beck stunk in the league, stunk for them. So that's just an example of why I don't believe anything this time of year. And I don't really go that far to try to figure that stuff out. I'm just at the point where like they do this all year, like go pick your players and then we'll go from there. So, you know, as far as, you know, McCarthy, they have Drake May going number, he has Drake May going number two to Washington. I don't know if that's part of the, you know, the report that's out there. I don't know if was it Adam Kaplan or somebody reported that Jaden Daniels didn't like his visit to Washington and hopes he ends up in New England, something along those lines.
Let me just jump in, which is just complete crap because he hasn't taken his 30 visit yet. Daniels is taking his visit with Washington next week. Both May and Daniels are going to Washington next week.
Okay.
So that I'm not buying that. I'm taking that with a huge grain of salt. I think it was Evan Silva who came out with
the
Commanders, that Jaden wants to go to New England. But again, he has not taken his top 30 visit to the Commanders yet.
Yeah. I would be, especially in the system that Cliff Kingsbury runs, you know, with the mobile quarterbacks and, you know, he had Kyler Murray in Arizona. You know, you would think that Jaden Daniels would be a perfect fit for what they probably aim to do on offense. And it would also give that team a chance to be like a legitimate playoff contender this year, because I think he's, you know, he's one of the more experienced guys. I would be shocked if they go Drake May at number two. But, you know, as far as McCarthy and the Patriots, I have a hard time taking J.J. McCarthy at number three. Now, do I think he's – if we're just going on the basis of the fact that Mac Jones was the 15th overall pick, do I think that J.J. McCarthy is a better prospect than Mac Jones was coming out? Yes, I think so. He's more athletic. He's got more snap on the ball. I think that he has proven himself a little bit more as far as adversity, coming through in big spots. I think he's just a little, I think he's a little bit better than Mac Jones in just about every other area. Now, that being said, you know, when you're talking about the third overall pick in the draft and a quarterback, I'm sorry, but I'm looking for elite traits. And if I think my coaching staff is worth a damn, and I can tell you that Elliott Wolf thinks the world of Alex Van Pelt and Ben McAdoo as far as the quarterback position, developing these guys. Van Pelt is terrific developing quarterbacks. I think that Elliott Wolf at the end of the day, and based off how his father viewed the quarterback position, J.J. McCarthy is the safe pick. There's no doubt. He has a higher floor than a lot of these guys. But Ron Wolf, you know, always swung big at the quarterback position, especially, you know, when it came to Brett Favre. And I just think that J.J. McCarthy, he's not elite throwing. He's not elite scrambling. Sure, his mind, maybe his intangibles are elite. You know, that's tough to measure. I just don't think he has enough elite traits to be taken in the top five for me. So, like, I throw a little bit of cold water on that.
I agree with everything you said. I'm taking the higher trait guy. I'm taking the guy with the higher ceiling, you know, high floor, safe pick. We've seen that act before. Didn't work. I want to take the big swing. That's what it's all about. And I just get a kick out of people like, and everybody is, obviously you can have your own opinion. That's, everybody has opinions. It's all subjective. I have an opinion. Greg has an opinion. But let's just understand one thing. All of these quarterbacks have flaws. There's not a single quarterback in this class that is flawless. Every single one of them, you will have a question. Every single one of them, you can frame it as, that's the end-all, be-all. That guy's not going to work out at the next level because of this. Caleb Williams, turnover machine. Turnover machine. Tries to do too much. Scrambles around like Wile E. Coyote, trying to make a play out of nothing. And when it happens, it works. It's a beautiful thing. And that's why people say he's Patrick Mahomes light, because he loves to extend plays and go bananas in the pocket and go schoolyard. Look, I could sit there and say he's penchant to turn the football over and, you know, he tries to do too much. That could ruin him in the NFL. Yeah, bad start. All of a sudden, first 7 weeks, first year, he's turned the football over a ton. He's never able to come back from that. Every single one of these guys have a criticism. So if you're going to not draft somebody because they have a weakness, don't draft anybody because they all have weaknesses. So give me the high-end traits. Tell me the positives. What can this guy do? If it falls in line, if he's coached right, which leads me to this. It's a hypothetical. You don't have to answer it if you don't want to, Greg.
Mm-hmm.
But in my head over the past week or two, I've been just thinking about this hypothetical situation. Let's say Drake May played for Jim Harbaugh. I'm not even talking about the team. I'm not talking about Michigan versus UNC. Jim Harbaugh is beloved as a quarterback whisperer, a guy who develops that position, gets the most out of that position. We know the lineage. If Drake May was coached by Jim Harbaugh, do you think this would even be a conversation between McCarthy and May?
Nope. And you're 100% right to ask this question. I completely agree with you. I think that Drake May would be a slam dunk prospect, possibly threatening to be the number one overall pick if he played for a QB-based sort of coach like Harbaugh.
Yeah, he played for Mac Brown. We appreciate Mac Brown, but Mac Brown's Mac Brown, a little long in the tooth and, you know, a little old school. And again, they changed systems and offensive coordinators. So McCarthy had one guy to work with, one guy to learn from, the quarterback whisperer, Jim Harbaugh. And so I agree with Greg. I think if Drake May worked with a guy like Harbaugh, man, oh man, people would be going bananas over him, even more than some are. All right, let's get back to Giardi's mock. Patriots trade number 34 and 137, along with a future fourth, to move up into the late first to number 27, owned by the Arizona Cardinals. I'd imagine this is part of Giardi's thought is get ahead of Buffalo, who's picking 28th now without Stephon Diggs.
Mm-hmm.
And Giardi selects A.D. Mitchell.
I think you're probably excited about this because we've sort of talked about A.G. Mitchell. A.D. Mitchell, you love him. I will look at the quarterbacks, the wide receivers next week. As people know who listen to this pod, I got a bad taste in my mouth from Mitchell at the combine workout. I did not think he looked very good at all. And I was like, who the hell is this guy? He's a bum. But that's just one view. So I will take another look, because obviously, you know, people that I respect, like you and Giardi, really like this guy. So, there's gotta be something there, but the thought of, I love the thought of trading back up into the first round to get either a wide receiver or a tackle. Now in his mock draft, Tyler Guyton from Oklahoma goes 22nd to Green Bay in a trade up. If they trade up, Kingsley Sumataya, the tackle from BYU, what'd you say?
Suamatia
goes 30th to Baltimore. So he would be on the board. I'm fine with either whoever they have rated higher, wide receiver or tackle. I'm fine. I love the idea of trading back into the first round and taking one of those guys. So whichever position, I'm fine with it. I love the trading up, getting a guy. And because this has been my whole thing about this offseason and people, you know, throwing temper tantrums about the Patriots not doing X, Y, and Z and all this stuff. Like, they have the potential to come out of this draft with a quarterback, an offensive tackle, and a wide receiver who can all start right away or play early and be impactful and start the process of all of a sudden, you know, in all of a sudden you're looking at the Patriots and you're saying, like, all right, between, you know, we have a rookie quarterback, rookie tackle, and a rookie wide receiver. They're going to grow up together. Look at what they did in year one, how the Patriots went from 4 wins to 7 wins. Like, I'm excited. To me, that's a path forward, and it's the ideal path forward for this team, and I think it's what they have to do.
They just got to hit on the picks, right?
Yep.
There's no doubt that if you hit on Drake May, then you trade back into the first round and you hit on an A.D. Mitchell if that's the pick like Giardi has. And then Giardi has them moving up again in the third round, trading 68 and 103 for 56 and 174 and drafting Patrick Paul, the tackle out of Houston.
Yep.
So if you hit on May, if you hit on, well, Giardi had McCarthy. If you hit on McCarthy, Mitchell, and Paul, then what you just said is 100% right, Greg. But, of course, there's risk. There's risk with everything. If you miss on one of those, two of those, or God forbid, all three of them, then you're royally screwed.
Yeah, but I do think, and I like the Patrick Paul pick. I think he's a good prospect. He's probably more of a guy you stick at right tackle year one and see where he goes from there. He does have the potential to play left tackle down the line. We saw him at the Senior Bowl. I liked what I saw, but I do think this path of sticking at three and trading up into the trading up twice to get the wide receiver and tackle that you want, I could very much see this playing out on draft day for the Patriots. I think it's the game plan that Elliott Wolf has going into this draft. And it, if I was a Patriots fan, I would be pretty happy about it.
It will be an interesting night. We're just about 2 weeks away. Everybody has been anticipating this. The more rumors are going to be thrown around, as we know, a bunch of smoke screens. I can't wait for that. I can't wait for that night. I can't wait for that weekend to see what Elliott Wolf and company does. First draft without Bill Belichick in forever. It's going to be a fascinating watch, even just to see who's in the war room. Is there 10 guys? Is there 15 guys? Is there 5 guys? Who's in that war room? What are the interactions like? How aggressive is Elliott? And I said this today, Greg, just in closing, I said this on my podcast earlier today. Like, if you are Elliott Wolf, there's a lot of talk, including you. You've mentioned trading for a veteran wide receiver. And when I hear you say that, and Tom Curran say that, and Chad Graff say that, and Adam Kaplan say that, I don't know. I just feel like somebody's talking. Mm-hmm. and that there's a feel that that's going to happen at some point, whether it's during the draft or after the draft. I don't want them to do anything with 34 until the night of the draft. Let the draft board play out.
Yep.
You don't know what's going to happen. Like, all of these mock drafts are just mock drafts. They're always wrong. We have no clue. What if Amarius Mims falls to the 20s?
Right.
You just don't know. So if I'm Elliott Wolf, I have all the scenarios laid out. I go into night one saying, okay, let's see what happens, because 34 is valuable. It might even be more valuable by the time we get through pick 18 or 20. So just let things unfold. And I think that's what we should expect from Elliott, to let things unfold, see who actually gets drafted where, and then take advantage of it. You agree, Greg?
Totally agree. Yep.
All right. He's Greg Bedard. I am Nick Cattles. I love ending with Greg saying he agrees with me. It's one of my favorite things in the world. We'll talk to you next time.